I love discipline.
I love it.
Michael, thank God I went to a convent. I'm so glad of every bit of my upbringing, even though it was traumatic, because I learned in it a fierce determination to escape it. I often think, had I had a placid, loving upbringing, I would have written little poems, you know, I don't mean little poems, but, you know, I would have been at peace with myself. But living as I do under a state of rage, I have a lot of rage about Ireland and childhood and ignorance, and the worst thing is of people enforcing their opinion on you, on people saying, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. Who are they? And yet we are fed in our different experiences. We are fed that forceful thing. And I'm minded. But in another way, my rage has given me perhaps an impetus. You know, there's a book, an essay by Edmund Wilson called The Wound and the Bow. And his theory is that the greater the wound of the individual, the more miraculous is the bow and the arrow. And it is, I don't want to make it seem like a kind of Roman Catholic thing, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I think it's true that disability, whether it's physical or environmental, whether it kind of sharpens the insight and the impetus, and it makes you do something. Mm-hmm. I would not want now, although all my life I've been Irish, I would not want to have had a happy child. I'm much more interested in that fight with that, and with the fears, and the fear of blood, and the fear of birth, and the fear of the crucifixion. Otherwise, one wouldn't have been interested at all in these things.
What are your feelings about death?
Well, they are very, very troubled, my feelings about death. I think I'm afraid of birth, even though I've given birth twice, but I'm afraid of my mother's birth of me more than of my birth of my children. That's why I think we do take a very long backward glance throughout our lives. We have to be... My fear of death is tremendous. Not just the method of dying, which is a really human and proud and of not kind of dying, you know, in a state of dementation or physical disability or being killed when a bomb goes off or murdered or whatever. But I also dread the next world, if you know what I mean. I've been reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and they talk about the states, you know, that the body goes through, and the wonderful phrase that they use all the time, which is the one of be not distracted. Be not distracted. They have a great word for it, which slips my memory for a moment. It's a word like bana, but it isn't bana. I'll think of it.
You mean karma, not karma.
No, it isn't karma. No, it's a word, it's a Tibetan word. I feel that... I try rather to tell... I think it's the other way around. I think this is with the source, isn't it? Is this the one with the source?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you very much. Had I grown up in India or Afghanistan or any place else, I would have been taught a different script as regards life and death. As it was, I was brought up in Ireland, and certainly death and dead faces and going to wakes and all that was as active as life, if not more so. I mean, was as in, you know.
Yes, we got some rice and eggs and carrots. I'd like some rice.
And
only rice.
I tried to tell myself that I should, just for sanity's sake.
Any potatoes for you, ma'am?
Yes. I'm not looking, but yes. Oh, enough!
Yes.
And in that way, I would like to overcome the irrational fear of death and to put hell aside. What do you fear about death yourself?
Rice milling?
Well, I feel
no rice, thank
it's natural. It's, I just think, it's, like Joyce said, form's changing.
Yes.
Just a moment, thank you.
I think Joyce was afraid of hell, too.
Oh, you do, yeah.
I think, well, he had a Jesuit in, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, I think he was. Yeah. I think, but he was so brave, he defied it.
Yeah.
But I think he was afraid of it.
None.
No rice.
Yeah.
I am terrified of it, of death. And it's a very immature place. Oh yes, I'd love some carrots.
And they give you some carrots.
And you give me some. What a coincidence. The desire and the fulfillment happen at the same moment.
No more.
Bringing something else, I think.
Leeks,
yes.
The unknown, really, that I fear. I mean, I don't.
Don't you fear that maybe you? I'd love some.
Yes.
I've gone a few mad for carrots. I think we can take it easy.
Let me squeeze a bit.
No, that's
okay.
No, thanks.
You're being modest.
Yeah.
I think all this isn't going to be eaten. I saw a film of Galileo the other evening, and there was one line in it that struck me with renewed force, and it was the line of Galileo saying of himself when he recanted. And he said that he had not remained true to his calling. And I think that's a wonderful thing to keep remembering, one's calling.
Yes.
And we forget. I forget, certainly.
One's purpose.
Which is quite a different thing to a simple egotistical trip, as it might be called.
Mm-hmm.
It's to do with, I remember I was a great friend of Sean Kenny's, and I loved him very much, and he loved me very much. And he always wanted to write, and he said that he couldn't because he thought it was an ego trip. And I said, Sean, I think your thinking it's an ego trip makes it an ego trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But how dare you just think it's for you? Because if it is, then, I mean, don't bother. But I'm glad Chekhov wrote.
Yes.
And Shakespeare and everyone has gone before.
Mm.
And you have to do it if you feel like doing it, and let others decide whether it was a wrong or a right thing.
Yes, exactly.
And he was very pleased with that, except that he died not so long after that.
Mm. Did he write? Did he begin?
He wrote small pieces, yes. He used to read to me. But he was self-conscious about it, because he didn't have faith in himself. I think in a curious way, you have to have faith in yourself despite all the anxieties and little doubts. Don't you find that for yourself?
Oh,
that
I do.
You
absolutely. And courage. It takes courage.
Oh, courage. Now that's the word that ought to be chalked on the wall, isn't it?
Did Sean Kenny, did he do sets for the Abbey?
He was about to, actually, when he died. Mm-hmm. He was going to do The King of Friday's Men. The last sets he did were for my play, A Pagan Place, at the Royal Court. That was his last. That was in the autumn. He then went to America, and he came back, and then he died in June. June, you see, that month. What month are you born?
June.
What day?
June 20th.
Funny, I knew you were going to say June. The person I was telling you about who departed from this world, just from my world, on the 24th of June, was also born on June.
Mm.
Which do you consider yourself, a Cancer or a
Gemini?
Hmm. Because it's just under.
24th would be cancer, yeah. 21st is.
Gosh, this is nice. Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yes, thank you for recommending that.
Inquired?
Lovely.
No.
Lovely.
Because the one I had first thought of is they're friends of mine. It's a lovely restaurant in Beecham Place called San Lorenzo. Do you know it?
No, I don't.
But the noise there.
It's just perfect, too.
Gorgeous.
Well, Edna, why do you think that in Ireland that they seem to have it in for you?
Well, I think a lot of reasons. Quite different reasons, which I really like to talk about. One is that for better or worse, I think I write fairly directly. I think fairly directly. I am not interested in placation or ingratiation. I've had that. When I was a child, I was like that. I was so good. I despise that in cold goodness. And a lot of people in Ireland, even the most outspoken people, are still frightened to tell the truth, their truth. They make savage little stabs, but they then immediately retract them and say, no, I didn't. That's the first thing. The second is that, and I don't want to sound going to a feminist thing because it doesn't interest me, because there's more, I mean, it's part of life, the feminist movement, and very valid, but it happens not to be what I'm obsessed about. But it is true, I think, that my being a woman made me more a butt of attack, because they thought, I mean, Irish men have been drunk and cads in fiction and in fact, but Irish women are sort of model, they're nurses and mothers, and they have maidenhood in them still and maidenheads. And it seemed to them, I lead a very myself rigorous life, but it seems to them that my books were a little nudge to women to go wrong. That. And when my first book was reviewed in the Catholic Standard, it said that this something smear on Irish girlhood is a book we can forget. They thought it was a smear on Irish. It's a great word, smear. But the third thing, reason, I think, there's a third incidental reason, which the Irish intellectuals, as such, not having achieved as much as they would like to achieve, suffer from a kind of chronic jealousy. And that's the truth. But the other thing, which a friend of mine pointed out to me the other night, which might even be, at the moment, the realist reason. His friend had read my play because Sean Kenny had told him what a marvelous play it was.
The Gathering.
The Gathering. It's not Irish at all. He then read all the reviews of the play, which were insulting. They were not only bad, they were insulting.
Yeah.
And he said that in his opinion, why the play so offended the sensibilities of Irish people was that Southern Ireland now, in its present state and trouble, you know, living on a knife edge between the North and England and the world abroad and the EEC, only want, or will only tolerate, I haven't.
We'll wait for it.
Will only tolerate a picture of Ireland presented that presents them as sane, sober, positive, really almost
middle class
values. Yeah. And my play is about the the normal madness in a normal family who don't know what they're saying, what they're doing, and what have a fair wreaking. And I think that's a very interesting reason.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I think all of them are true. I mind it, as you can imagine. I mind it. And in another way, I am very happy to have the freedom to come and go. Because had I not that, I would be, well, I would have metaphorically my head chopped off. Because they're tough, and they don't give an inch. What is ironic is, they're quite interested almost in the trivia of being a well-known writer. Like, I don't mean to be insulting, but like being on television or something. They're quite interested in that because they think it's somehow like being like a film star, you know? It has a... And that interests me very much because it's so shallow not to realize that you either like someone for what they do and respect them and listen to them, or you hate them for what they do. But they don't make that...
Politicians are very much that way. Have to be the celebrity, the film star-like image.
Oh, yes. Well, it's a small country with enormous in the individuals drivenness, and they want very much to make an impression. Some want to do it one way and some another. I think they have been throughout the, you know, the last 50 or 60 years, they have been like bad butchers to literature, which is ironic when you think of the fact that they have such marvelous writers. What I think is very, very sad is why there are so few writers now, and where are they? I think that's very sad, but also very puzzling. When I was in Dublin for the gathering, among the many other little bad times that I had, was a gentleman, won't name because it would be libelous, an author, came to see me, and he said to me, you know, he said, you're the joke of Dublin, your writing. Oh, really? I said. Oh, yes, he said, you know what they talk, you know how they refer to you? I said, he said, well, they refer to you in the pubs. All the young poets referred to you as the bandwagon. This was supposed to be a great pun on the fact that I had got on the bandwagon of my books being banned, which I didn't. I didn't have my books banned. Someone else, they did, the censors. The other was that I was a whore, who was, you know, who was a wagon. And then he told me a few more little data about myself, that I'd come back to Ireland and had my play put on, because it wouldn't have been put on anywhere else in the world, and that I was pursuing some man. I mean, can you imagine the logic of, you have a play, but you know, bad enough to be put on. And what, terrible, very bad. What came across was the very deep,
I think I know who
ending.
The man was. He has, he wears lavender glasses. Or...
Didn't have them on when I signed, but maybe it is the same man. Tell me who you think. It's
John Broderick.
Well, no, he hates me. Should I tell you my John Broderick story?
Yeah.
I'm determined to eat it all. The John Broderick story is a terrible story. And this is all slightly gossip, and we don't want to talk about gossip, but I'll tell you this. John Broderick is a friend of my former husband, whose name is Ernest Gabler. He reviewed, he wrote a great dissertation on me in Hibernia, in that my talent was to do with my dirty knickers, and etc. He happened to have made the mistake of quoting in the review direct quotations which my husband has written to me in private letters. Now that seems, I can hardly call it a meeting of minds as much as a meeting of sewerages. So that appeared. I knew it was the next week. Then my husband wrote in to corroborate Mr. Broderick's. And It was disgraceful. Brian Friel wrote to Hibernia and said he was discontinuing his subscription, which was very nice of him. But it was an awful...
Brian Friel.
It was an awful and harming thing. Was I not as tough as I am, it would have sent me out.
Yeah.
Last year, I really am finished. I'm in Dublin, in the Hibernian, and one of the waiters, all of whom I know very well, started chatting to me. Oh, sure, there's another writer here, Miss O'Brien. It's Mr. John Roderick. Who? Mr. John Roderick. Excuse me. And I go over. Not a woman to be daunted, am I? If someone, does that to me, I go over and I said, Mr. Broderick? He said, yes. I said, my name is Edna O'Brien. He stood up to shake hands. I said, don't bother. Don't bother with the courtesies. I said, I would like you to know that you did an injurious thing and you wronged me and wronged truth. And I would like you to know that. He said, is that all you have to say? I said, take your glasses off and look at me. And you'll remember that. And quite right. And Mr. Broderick then, via the manageress of the Hibernian, invited me to a dinner, which I naturally declined. No, I will not see it done to me or to anyone. The moment I smell that kind of venom, I'm going to say, that's what you're doing. So that's what you are. Call yourself that. Don't call yourself a critic or a writer. But those things are only the margins. The only thing is they can...
Edna,
they can.
How much of that do you think is important
To be concerned
for an artist, for this negative side of society that will attack the artist? If intuitively, somehow they know it's good, but yet they... do you think this is important for the artist to go on doing better and better work?
Well, I think...
And does this kind of thing create an artist? I mean, this negative...
Obviously, the original foundation does a lot towards creating it. Not when you're in your so-called adult life, because...
But as a child.
As a child, yeah. I think it does. Yeah. As a child...
There has to be this
There has to be, yes, seeds of complete, you are nothing, in order for the self to say, I will show them
yes,
I am something.
Yes,
it's very interesting,
yes,
psychology.
Yes, yes.
What I think it is in, and I think Sean O'Casey, for instance, took a lot of his time and energy and sap, having quarrels with parish priests and bishops in outer Ireland.
Yes.
I think it's very wrong to get engaged in it. I mean, I did that to John Broderick because that was right. That was honor. If I was a man, I would have hit him. That was an absolute straight thing.
Should have hit him.
Well, no, what I did was very edifying. It was. I mean, there were three people in the Hibernian that said, my God, it was right thing for me to do. What I think that these little arrows that are sent... that they finally have very little to do with the next piece of inspiration. Because you know what Bassanio said about his melancholy? What stuff 'tis made of, whereof 'tis born, I am to learn. Well, I feel exactly that about talent, gifts, or whatever word we want to use. You don't really know what you're going to do next, if anything. All you know is, when you're doing it, it's not bad. It's not bad. And it's as if you are in doubt, I do believe, during that time. When I was writing what I read out to you today, I was away from my present life and John Broderick's of this world and everything.
Well, would you sort of consider that, Yeats's wife did sort of automatic writing. Would you consider it a close link?
Yeats's what?
His wife did this automatic writing.
Really?
Yeah.
George Yeats? What did she do?
Well, she would sit down and just start writing something that's...
Oh.
You know, that kind.
William Burroughs did that too. Yeah. No, I don't think that's the same thing. No. I didn't know she did. I'd be very interested to hear that. About that. No. No, that's... Thank you.
I think coffee has...
Coffee. Do you have tea, by any chance? Herb... Do you have chamomile tea? Herb tea? If not real tea, I'd like tea. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And cafe espresso.
And with? No, the automatic... I think they're completely opposite. The one is the conscious attempt at reaching the unconscious. And the other, which is when the angel is there, is the unconscious working through the conscious. They're completely opposite. No one, I don't know about Shakespeare, because he was the greatest ever, but no writer that I've had any friendships with, and I have friendship with a few writers, ever in a strange way considered themselves responsible for what they've written when it's good. They consider that something, something came. I read a wonderful poem yesterday, which is the opposite of this, to Branwell Bronte. It's Matthew Arnold, and he says, it's at the graveyard, or the supposed graveyard of Branwell. And Matthew Arnold says, or the poem says, oh boy, if here thou sleep well, on thee too did the muse bright in thy cradle shine. A shadow came, I know not what, and interposed. And it's a marvelous line, a poem, and it's a terrible thing about talent or gifts, that those who possess them don't know where they came from and don't know how long they'll last. And there is in people of whom we all three probably know several, who have a great creative urge but no creative ability. And that makes for a big bitterness. It really makes them murderous.